Get ready for the Girls on Games podcast, your weekly dose of news, reviews, and everything video games. Always served with a good helping of hype and just a pinch of salt. And now, your host, Leah.
Hello and welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah. I'm the host of the show. This is episode number 442, and this week we're going to talk about a petition to stop killing games. And you can now also get emulators on the Apple App Store. And we're going to dig into that in a few minutes. But first, let me introduce you to the friendly voice joining me around this digital table today. Hey, Joelle!
Hello, singular, Just me.
Yeah, just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Building castles.
Yeah, that too. Whatever one.
I don't know if it's ever been just the two of us before.
I don't think so.
Oh, this will be fun though, because we've got some cool stuff to talk about. We'll get into that very soon. I'd like to remind you that if you like this show, you can subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Podbean. If you'd like to get some GOG merch, you can do that by going to designbyhumans.com/shop/girlsongames. Maybe you'd like to give us a tip, maybe buy us a coffee. You can do that by going to Ko-fi, that's ko-fi.com/girlsongames. Today was an eventful day because there was a solar eclipse. Joelle, did you get to see it at all where you are?
No, it was cloudy all day in Minneapolis. And then when I looked online of like when we were quote unquote supposed to see it, it was around 2 o'clock p.m. our time, central time. And like the sky didn't change colors at all. So it was very uneventful where I was. But how about you?
So it happened here, but it was very cloudy. So we couldn't see, I couldn't see anything. Now, mind you, I didn't even buy glasses, but like, cause I figured I had a meeting in the middle of it. And I'm like, I'm not going to move the meeting. Meeting ended up getting canceled, but it did get really dark, like a really dark, like I was like, I kind of want to feel the vibe. So I turned off like the lights and opened the blinds and stuff, just kind of get the gist of it. It felt like those times, like especially in the summertime when it's gonna really pour out of the heavens and the storm is a brewing, and yeah, it felt like that and then disappeared really quick. So it came back to bright. But I did see some pretty awesome photos and things online, and I was watching a bunch of different YouTube channels kind of tracking it. One for Canada, one was NASA, things like that. So it was kind of cool to see all of that, because I think the next one like this is supposed to be like in 2044 or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they said something like that. Anyways, it was like one of those moments, and it might not hit us, right? Because, you know, it's not always in the same spot. Like I think the last one in 2017 we didn't really see it all here in the Toronto or Montreal is where I would have been at that time.
Yeah, I think it's crazy that I mean I know you're like in Toronto and I'm Minneapolis, but like we're not that far away. Like, we are far away, but in terms of, like, the whole United States, I guess just, like, in my perception, like, looking at it, I'm like, you're not, like, that far. And I just think it's crazy that, like, I saw basically nothing. But I had friends in Austin and some folks in Vermont, and they had some really cool photos of just the eeriness where they said, like, all of a sudden, like, it just got dark, like you said. Like, it just got dark, and then it was, like, it's almost like a huge storm is about to come because everything got so dark. And then after a while, then, like, the lights came back on, and it was bright again. And, like, I loved the conversation around, you know, what did people, like, 400 years ago think about this when – because in some places you might not even think to look up, or like you might not know, and like you couldn't see, and like what a wild time. Just have no idea what's going on.
The broadcast that I was watching coming out of Niagara was like, the temperature is dropping, and I was like, wow, this sounds like the apocalypse.
Yeah, cool.
My parents my mom was texting me saying that they watched it. I haven't had a chance to talk to her about it yet because it did like this like sideways like arch over kind of like it went from like the bottom left corner of America right up over mm-hmm. us. And we were yeah. like 99% mm-hmm. While Niagara was like 100% mm-hmm. and then went over and went up over Newfoundland and everything. So I'm curious to see because I would imagine my dad would have tried to take a picture or two.
Yeah, so cool. I mean, it's yeah. just, it's such a cool, just like, you know, universe and like space science and all that stuff. Like,
science!
Science! Like, just really, really cool that this phenomenon happens. And it's pretty much like unobstructive, like to our existence. I think that's also a little wild. It's not like we have to like prepare for this.
Well, and it's also like how important the sun is, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah,
because you always think about the Matrix when they're they torch the sun.
I thought about that too. I was like, oh man, this is just a taste of what it would be like when the AI bots come on and they realize that we're so dependent on the sun. maybe we should try to program them to notice that we're dependent upon something else, like not yeah. quite as sustaining. Like
they might know too much now.
I don't know. Maybe we're still in the baby phases where we could trick it and try to divert their algorithm to be like, they can't live without Doritos or Mountain Dew or something.
Well, according to ChatGPT that sometimes I use to help me come up with ideas and things, especially when it comes to research, is a quick look. It knows from 2021 and before. So somehow something has to have happened in 2022 to confuse it so that we don't rely on the sun.
That's funny.
Oh, my goodness. What have you been up to this week? Anything interesting?
I went to St. Paul has an art crawl. That is the first Fridays of every month from now, I think, until June or July. And it was the very beginning, so there wasn't a ton up, but I still went and then hit up a really great taco spot by me. So with a friend, and that was fun. And honestly, Leah, I'm just in a whole lot of therapy right now. Got a lot of physical therapy and mental therapy going on. So I'm just working a lot on those pieces, kind of doing a lot of maintenance and getting myself all right and set up for the rest of my life, hopefully. So
that's good. It's important to work on you.
It is important. And, you know, you're never, you know, 37 and, you know, never too young or too old to make some big life changes and to try to get your shit together. So
yeah
yeah.
I'm guess I'm doing something similar, planning for R&R because I go to Mexico on Friday. So
lovely.
I need it, Mike needs it, and yeah, so this weekend I had taken Friday off. I had obviously time to use after all the overtime I had done with the mm-hmm. website project. I was just like spent. mm-hmm. So yeah, had a few days to ourselves, and we did a lot of like stuff around the house, cleaning and organizing and things like that. Because my buddy John's going to come up and take care of the dog, so we wanted to make sure that stuff was organized for him. So yeah, lots of organizing and cleaning and going to get groceries and things like that. Though I was saying to Mike earlier, because we ended up getting groceries on Saturday because Mike worked yesterday, so he went Saturday, but then I'm like, Mike, we're gonna have to go pick up a few more things for John because I'm eating it. Like all these things are yeah. like John's like, I want this and this and this and this, and then I'm like, ooh, that looks tasty, so I eat it.
Yeah, well, what else, you're there, right? What
are you supposed to do? I know, I'm here. So yeah, yeah. But yeah, you know, just getting all the odds and ends ready to go. Mike picked up pesos and stuff like that, so yeah, 2 days of work left, and then we took Thursday to kind of recoup and pack, and I'm gonna get mani-pedi, you know, because mm-hmm. I haven't had a pedicure in a long while, because, like, who sees your feet in the wintertime anyway?
Yeah. That's the time for you to allow all the things to grow, right? Because, like, you wear pants, so that stuff can grow. Don't wear a bathing suit, and then, you know, you don't need to, like, do your I definitely don't do my nails, especially on my feet as often. I also went and got a a pedicure the other day. It was so nice. I can't get the gel on my toes.
No, because, I just do normal nail polish on my toes.
Yeah. If I get the gel on my toenails will rip off of my toes.
How? Like, why? Because of the, when they try to remove it with the cleaner?
I don't know what it is, but I think, I don't know if my nail is just too brittle, but when I get gel, the lacquer gets so hard that, like, it takes off my toenail.
Interesting.
So I shall not ever get gel again because I don't want to keep regrowing my toenails.
I just find that, like, the nail polish on my toes, because my toes don't get that much abuse like my hands do, that it just stays a lot longer. Yeah. And the only time, like, it does start, it was, like, after they grow for a bit. But then also, too, like, you, like, bang your toe. Yeah. Of course it's going to chip, right? Yeah. You banged your toe. So I would just do normal nail polish because also, too, just thoughts about sitting there and waiting for that to come off your toes.
Oh,
just
I like, know. Ugh.
That's the big thing when I do the manicures is it's gel, but it's on top of, like, bio gel. So they just, like, file it off.
Oh.
Yeah. So they file it off and then rebuild because some of it grows out and then just shape it and then put the stuff on top of it.
Oh, that's nice. I want to...
My nails are weak, so I need it. Like, they just peel. So I'm like, this is the only way. If not, I would never, ever be able to keep my nails long at all. They would be stubs all the time. So
that's fast. Do you have to go to a special salon? I've never seen that. No, I've ever just seen normal. That.
There's different types of, like, I guess this is becoming the Mani Pedi podcast. So there's different stuff. So there's normal nail polish. Mm-hmm. Then there's the gel nail polish. Yeah. Then there's acrylic. Yes. And the acrylic dries over time. But then there's bio gel, which is essentially like a gel builder that they put on and they cure it with the light.
Huh.
So they do that and then put the gel nail polish on top.
Huh.
Like, they shape it and everything, put the gel nail polish on top and put the clear coat on top of that with the gel. And they're hard. Like, if I break it, it's significant. Like, I've only, in the past, like, few years, I've only broken a nail once, and that's because it was an accident with Gibson. But, like, they are hard. And that's even, like cleaners, I cleaned the house on Friday, and my nails, you wouldn't know.
Oh my gosh.
They're fine.
Are your nails, like, you know, you have the beautiful almond shape.
Yes.
Are those like your real nail shape too?
Under, yeah. It's my real nail under. Okay. So I just did it and it just grows out until, because when they first put up, but when I cracked my pinky nail, they put a tip on it until it grew out. But now it's all my nails under it. So it's just like they're just putting it on top of my nail.
Yeah. That's so, I'm going to see if the nail salon that we like to go to will do that.
Because
I've gotten dip because I like my nails shorter. It's just easier. I don't know. I just like my nails short. So they do dip and that seems to work okay. But I don't know. Sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to pay for acrylics, but
yeah. Like acrylics, I think you have to take it off. I haven't taken out. These just grow out. Over time, right?
Yeah,
you just keep filling on top of it.
Yeah, acrylics, usually your nails are shorter, and then they put it over top. It's like a whole acrylic nail, and then they like glue it on the nail, or you know, do adhesive to it, and then they shape and shorten the nail like however you want.
Mm.
So it's like they're not even your real nail at all, huh?
Yeah. So this is like, I find now I'm sure like if I did just the gel, but then the soaking it off would probably melt my real nail because it is so fine. It just peels. So this is the only way that I can keep them nice. And I find that, it's just nicer on the hands. Though, I do get to a point where they're too long and I can't type.
Yeah.
So mechanical keyboards all around is definitely the key. Because if not, it's too hard to type.
Yeah, that's where, like, as soon as my nails, where they start, like, obstructing, like, taking out my contacts or typing on the keyboard, I'm just like, nope, we're done. Like, it's over. And with how much I cook and stuff, like, I always get stuff, like, stuck underneath. And I don't know, I'm just like, ugh. It's just too much to deal with.
It's a little bit like getting my hair done. It's a little bit like I go and it's like therapy. It's like an hour where, like, I physically can't really do anything because they have to take my hands away from me. So best I'll do is, like, listen to a YouTube video or a podcast or an audiobook or something. And they do my nails. And I love it. It's me time.
It is nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, let's talk about Fantasy Critic. Yes. And everything that's been going on. Let me open up the podcast league. I have a feeling maybe not much happened because I didn't do anything. Did you do anything this week?
Did it register that I tried to drop a game?
you, April 6, 2024, you drop successful. You dropped yes. Mario Kart unannounced mainline console game.
Yeah.
Very good.
I think I was like, I was just grabbing all the stuff I could, you know? Mm-hmm. And then now I'm like, I don't know, even if it comes out, I guess I just have a hard time believing it's going to come out before the new hardware. But I don't know. I could be wrong, but I just thought better safe than sorry. Because you're just like, I don't know. You're kind of
running a lot of
away.
I got a lot of points, but the problem is that I haven't picked anything up.
We're rounding the corner to spring announcements, you know,
yeah.
And then we got fall. So there's still lots of yeah. year left. So
there is time, and I don't think anything new came out. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's go over to the community league because maybe some action happened over there. Let's see. Dun, dun, dun. Ooh, so the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation dropped a game on April 6th. They dropped Earthblade. So that's the only action on that front. Mm-hmm. Darth is back up at the top. So what game came out that he managed to pick up or managed to get points on? Let's see. It's either Ultros or Pacific Drive. I have a feeling it's Pacific Drive that he got 10 points for. So yeah, that's where we stand. I don't know if anything else came out that I missed. Penny's Big Breakaway. No, I think that's been out for a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, not too much happening. But I mean, like, it's we're in that little bit of lull right now, I would say, in between.
Yeah, and how many games just dropped like a few weeks? Like, you know, a few weekends ago was like so many games all at once.
Yeah. So. April at least seems a little calmer, which, you know, is good to be able to jump into some of the back catalog. Like, I know Darth had mentioned there's a game on Game Pass that I had been actually looking at too. Let me see the name of it off the top of my head. I want to make sure I get it right. It is called Botany Manor. It's on Game Pass, but, like, I'm going to have to wait until I come back from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm sticking with the mobile games now. So, what are you playing?
I downloaded and completed the Stellar Blade demo on PS5.
Oh, what'd you think?
Overall, I thought it was a great introduction to the game, to mm-hmm. the world and the characters and the storyline. So
cool.
The beginning really grabs you with action and story and explosions and over-the-top Japanese space saga. And you get a sense of, like, who your character is, you know, what she's about and what her motivation is. Mm-hmm. And it really seems as though it kind of marries a like Nier Automata, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, a little over the top, like art style, but, you know, grungy and muted tones and things like that with really, I think the combat is going to be quite deep and dense mm-hmm. to get used to. The boss fight for the demo was very fun. In some ways, it really centers around, like, combat. There's some cool platforming that you can do. Mm-hmm. Your main character, she can climb. And Eve, so she can climb up on buildings. She can also swim. There's some swimming that you do in the demo. So that's kind of neat. And you only get one weapon that you have to utilize. And it teaches you a few fighting mechanics. And so some of the art style also reminds me a little bit of Returnal.
Okay.
But the game isn't nearly as difficult, which is nice, at least so far.
Isn't it like an anime-esque style, or am I crazy?
It's anime, I guess, in the sense, like, you know, like Final Fantasy VII Remake is
okay,
that
okay,
style.
Okay, yes, yes.
So it's not like in that cartoon anime, but like the characters are, I mean, Japanese and in you know, the Bayonetta with the hair and like the body and like all that kind of stuff. But she's kind of like an android, human character. And you're set out to discover like what happened to her people after this epic space battle. And as you land in the inner city, you know, they kind of teach you about your safe camps that you, you know, re-up on, like, your health, and you can open up more of your skill tree. Lots of really neat skill trees that you get to see. And then also there's a lot of costumes that we'll be able to unlock and, like, dress Eve up as. And she has this cool little robot companion named Adam.
Okay.
A floating little sidekick. And he, I thought, integrated, like, really well. So he gave you hints, or he gave you kind of directions on what to do and where to go at a really nice pace. But he wasn't overly aggressive with his help. So I thought they did a nice balance of kind of relationship building between the two. And I really like this mechanic when games do this, is that you can hit like a sonar button for him and it'll like ripple through the stage that you're in, and it'll, you know, highlight chests to open and enemies that are there and points of interest. Like, that's kind of neat, where if you, because you're kind of enclosed, you know, in the inner city, there's lots of buildings and things, so it's hard to know what's coming around the corner. And I kind of like it when games make you feel like you have that sense of power to understand, like, where things are at. So that was good. If I had, like, one sort of hesitation maybe about buying the game right away, is that while the boss combat was fun, and it did a good job of, like, teaching you how to adequately fight this end boss, the enemies in between, the combat seemed to lag quite a bit. So the enemy animations were really slow. So it was hard to kind of get used to the timing a bit, because it was so slow. And sometimes I felt like my inputs on my controller were also slow.
Oh.
So there seemed, most of my struggle was just learning the timing. And coming from Rise of the Ronin, where things were just at a really nice, like, clip and really slick and speedy, this one, it just took like 4 beats longer than like what I'm used to. And I know that some other folks have given this critique about the game online, so we'll see if the developers kind of do anything about it. They said that it might quicken up in the actual game.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, it was fun, and I'm curious to learn more about the game. Yeah.
Do you think that maybe, because I'm watching, like, I'm on the website now, kind of looking through it, and a lot of the, like, highlight fighting stuff that they're showing, there's a lot of, like, for lack of a better term, bullet time, where it slows down the animation, and it looks like there's a lot of instances where it's kind of showing that. I don't know if they're doing that for just, like, this is a special effect and sometimes it happens, or if that's what it's like all the time, and that bullet time is for you to get your inputs to do it right. But maybe, yeah, is that do you think the intention is that that's always there, or is that just like when you manage to complete like special moves and things like that?
So yeah, the combat, I would say, from what I under, like, how I played, it's going to be a bit more defense focused. So it's not going to be like a Devil May Cry, like full true hack and slash, where you can just kind of mash and like go to town and still come out victorious. Like, you're going to have mastered some basic defense, so like perfect parries, perfect dodges. There's a power that you get in the demo called Blink, where if you have when an enemy is trying to do a finishing move, you know, they'll glow blue, And then if you input your buttons correctly, you get to dodge that move and then do a backstab attack.
Okay.
So I think that the game is going to have more of those types of moves where you're going to have to perfectly parry or dodge and then do another attack on the end of it. So it's really satisfying when you get those moves down. It's just that, to me, I felt like the enemies in the demo were just so slow. We're so, like, slow to attack. So they would raise their arm, and then you kind of think then they would attack, but then they'd, like, pause, and then they would go. And then I was like, I would input too quickly, and then I would die a lot because I'd be too fast. But then when you get to the boss is a little bit quicker. And I was like, all right. I was like, okay. I'm like, here we go. Like, this is where we're going. So I don't know if the demo is just really trying to give players a little time to acclimate and to practice. Mm-hmm. And then it'll kind of speed up. But I was like, if this is the whole game where the enemies are this, like, lethargic to attack you, I was like, I'm just waiting. Like, I'm having to wait for them to do anything. So, We'll see. It was an interesting, I did a little bit of research on it because I'm just like, I'm experiencing this. Is anyone else experiencing this? And yeah. I guess players were, and they were giving feedback to the developer, Shift Up Corporation. Mm-hmm. And Shift Up's response was, well, maybe you need to put your TV in gaming mode because the frames are faster. And I was like, that's not a thing, Shift Up.
Wow.
I was like, that's not great. Wow. I was like, that's not a great response.
No, not a great response.
So, yeah. So, I mean, otherwise, that was good. I am also kind of hoping that there might be a bit more accessibility options in there then. So, you know, if you're going to have a game that's so focused on combat and timing and things like that, that you'll give players a little bit of a leg up and an advantage in that way, you know, like we're seeing in some of the other, you know, big AAA games like Spider-Man and God of War and that kind of stuff for slowing down time. And so you could do it without having perfect inputs. We'll kind of see what happens when this game fully comes out. I believe that it comes out at the end of this month on the 26th.
April 26th. Yeah.
So
we're around the corner.
Yeah.
And yeah, but sometimes you never know with demos too, because you don't know how early in the process it was made. If it's the instance is just for, like, a demo could be like the first bit of the game and they just like stop you. It could be like a certain thing just to train you on this stuff, but that's not actually what you'll end up playing because maybe they'll drag it out longer. Like, you don't know, right? That's like the conversation we were having about Princess Peach last week a little bit, right? It's like, is this the game? Like, after playing both Princess Peach and this, you're intrigued by both and willing to see. It's not like you, like, Forspoken, when I played that, was it Forspoken? Oh. Yeah, that demo didn't go over very well.
I remember playing that demo and being like, I don't know if I like anything about this. But with Stellar Blade, like, the one thing, I'm like, I'm intrigued. I like this. The art style is fun. The story, I think, is interesting. Like, even if it's, and at the end of the demo, they give you little bits and pieces of cutscenes on what the game is going to be. And it does seem like the story does evolve quite a bit. I won't spoil it. Because I felt like there was some slight spoilers at the end of that. But it definitely made me, you know, hungry for more and more interested to play. I just, like, the one thing, well, as I was going, I'm like, if I have to kind of sludge in between, like, bosses to have fun, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy it as much. Or I don't know if it's going to, you know, want me to explore. Because, you know, you get your loot from exploring and they invite you to do that in the game. And so, like, that's where I'm intrigued to want to explore and traverse. But if I'm just going to be getting killed by all these slowpoke, like, drunken enemies that can't seem to swing appropriately, like, I don't know if I'm going to have a good time. So that's where, like, I might just – I'm really interested to see how if they do anything with that for the release.
Cool. I'm still working my way through Dave the Diver. Joelle, you need to play this game.
I do?
Oh, yeah. Because here's the thing. All right. So you've got the whole diving mechanic.
Yeah.
And getting fish and whatever, right? And that grows through the types of fish you have to create to catch. Both, like, ones that are, you know, you can harpoon and drag in. Ones that you have to shoot and they're too big and you have to get... You either need to slice and dice them up right there in the spot or get, like, a drone to come pick them up. Or they're so small that you have to wait and get another tool to be able to catch them.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's that. Then there's the sushi shop, which, you know, cooking, you know, managing a shop, hiring people to work with you, having cooks, having waiters, having people that you dispatch to try and get some items that you can't normally get. There's a whole mechanic around... breeding fish. So as you catch them, if you catch them in a way that's kind of not harmful, so if you use like a harpoon gun or a net gun or something like that, you have an opportunity to be able to gain fish roe or, you know, eggs of some sort, and then grow and harvest fish easier because you can just have them multiply. There's a farming mechanic. I'm now farming rice, and I believe there's other things too. But what I didn't anticipate throughout the story, there's also like mini games and things, and one of them revolves around these cards, but like I think it's more of a collect-a-thon card game, and you have to collect these boss cards. But in order to do that, I went and did one today where I was given this task. It was a stormy night. They wanted me to go out in the water at nighttime where the enemies are more dangerous and they hit harder. So every fish out there or shark or eel or whatever is trying to kill you. And they're like, go find this vortex and get the boss card. And I'm like, okay, so I'm swimming around and I finally find this vortex, which is right next to a shark. So I scramble up there and go in, and right away the prompt is like, do you want to go to this new area and do this boss battle? And I'm like, oh, what? So I end up going to this other area to do this boss battle against a hermit crab that has a tractor as its shell. And it's trying to kill me. And it was a really fun fight. And the ones that I also encountered another one where I was sent on a mission to catch this one fish, and I caught five of them, and then all of a sudden this giant version came and swallowed me whole. I was not prepared for any type of a boss battle, and then I started in at a fight, and it took me a good half an hour to figure out, but once I figured it out, it was fun.
Oh my gosh, so then you got the boss card?
Yeah, so I got that one. Victory. I got, yeah, and it's just like, there's like, but they're fun, interesting missions that make you think about all the different skill sets you've been given as you've worked your way through the game, but not in a way that's like super hand-holdy. Like the one one of the things I had to do as part of the mission was to open up these areas. In order to do that, I needed to have gloves so that I could pull a stake out and all these like rocks would fall. So we'll get through that mission, whatever. In doing that, this mitts that I was able to obtain also made it so that I could pick up urchins, sea urchins. Because before, anytime I went to try and pick them up, they were spiny and they would hit me and I would hurt.
Yeah.
Now I can pick them up. So, didn't really think too much of it. Had a few other mechanics throughout the game where it's like, oh, you can pick up this rock and throw it down, drop it on something, and it'll open another area. So, anyways, go into this boss battle. None of my weapons were working. And I was like, how in God's name? Like, I was like, he would, like, slam down and pieces would fall out of the sky. I'm like, do I harpoon a piece of shrapnel and throw it at him? Like, I was doing everything. Like, what do I do? And then I realized when he was like slamming his claws down, digging into the sand, he would pull up these what looked like oil drums. So I would pick up the oil drum, have to swim up above his head and drop it down in the spot between like where the crab and the tractor truck met. And that's how you would injure it.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that's smart. That's smart.
Devs be Devin.
Yeah, I'm like, this is cool. This game is awesome. Like, never have I gotten to a point where I'm like, one, this has become too repetitive. It's mm-hmm. always, as soon as, like, starting to get the swing, it throws something else at me. But never gets overwhelming. Because the way that they've paced it, it's not like you don't really have any time penalties outside of the fact that, like, you got to be careful of your oxygen when you're underwater. But there's so many opportunities for you to be able to pick up more oxygen.
Okay.
So, like, as long as you, like, unless you, like, run out of, like, backpack space for you to carry things, or you, like, in the beginning when they kind of, like, handhold you in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. But as you upgrade your character and do everything you need to do to kind of progress, it never feels like it gets to the point where it's grindy until it and then all of a sudden it's like, bam, here's a new mechanic.
Mm, that's nice.
And you're like, how? And I'm like, oh, now I can pick up the urchins.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Now I end up having to throw oil drums at giant crabs with tractors on their back.
Yeah.
It's really fun and humorous. And I think, because I know that you enjoyed the Cult of the Lamb one.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I think you would like this, too.
Yeah.
And it's great on Switch.
I was going to ask, you're playing it on Switch, right? Because I almost thought about maybe I should get it for my Ally.
Yes, you could do that, too. I just like the fact that I can, like, the whole reason I picked it up there is because I wanted to be able to travel with it.
Right.
So, like, you know, doing the whole, I was playing Doc today on the TV, but then Mike's racing out there now. When I go out front, I'll just pick it up and play it from the, you know, play it in handheld.
Yeah.
And I played it all during Easter handheld when I was away. So, yeah, I really like this game a lot. Like, a lot, a lot. Like, I have no desire to want to, like, I hope it doesn't end anytime soon. I don't know how much more they're gonna throw at me.
Don't make it end.
But yeah, so I'm glad I started it and got this involved in it before going away, because I don't know if I would have gotten this invested if I had waited until I was traveling, because sometimes I find when I'm traveling it's just harder to jump into something new. I kind of want something I'm comfortable with.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to necessarily, like, you're on vacation, your brain is like on slow mode, like ease mode. I don't want to have to learn a bunch of buttons or mechanics. Like, I don't got time for that. Like, I want to jump in and, like, play. I don't want to have to learn necessarily like as I go. So yeah, that was smart.
Yeah. So I think you should try this later when you get time. And I'm sure it'll go on, like, a sale or something this year. Because now, like, this came out, like, around this time last year, and everybody was, like, going bananas over it. And I understand why everybody was going bananas. I just didn't have time at that time to play it. And now, after this, like, I'm definitely trying Dredge. And they have, like, a crossover thing. So, I'm super curious.
It was... Oh, yeah, that's right, the crossover. It was just on their spring sale for Steam, and I saw it, and it's on my wish list, so it was like, it's on sale, but I think that sale's over now, so
yeah,
I missed the sale. But right now on Steam, the base game is $20 US, and then
that's great.
If you want to buy Dredge and Dave the Diver as the bundle, which is the I think part of the is that the crossover? I think so.
It might be the crossover component of it. Because I know there's a DLC crossover component, but I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Yeah, so you can buy the bundle. But it is, I'm looking at it, it does say that it's Steam Deck certified or compatibility verified on Steam, which makes me believe it'll run well on the Ally.
Yeah, so. I think it's because they definitely built it with a controller in mind.
Oh, perfect.
Like, yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, I highly recommend it. I'm realizing I seem to be playing a lot of games, though, where mer people are involved, because there's mer people in this, and there's mer people in Coral Island. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's my 2024 trend, is mer people.
Is mer people? Yeah, that's your, that's your thing. Is the weakness is mer people.
Thing of the year.
Yeah, mer people.
And last week, the 1.16 update came to Stardew Valley, but it's only on PC yet. I really wish it was on Switch, because that would be my other thing that I'd be playing right now on traveling, would be that. But it's not, they're not ready yet. Hopefully
so
soon.
Is the Haunted Chocolatier then ever going to come out, or is he just going to keep updating
Stardew Valley? No.
I mean, I'm not, you know, just saying.
Like, I mean, like, we're waiting. I know. Yeah, I kind of want, like, I have played a lot of Stardew Valley, like in the 400 to 500 hours of Stardew Valley. Oh. Yeah.
Oh,
so, like, I'm ready for the next Concerned Ape game. Like, really ready.
Yeah, yeah. I could.
Though, I'd still play this. Like, I'm still, like, I would start fresh on one of the new map or whatever and do all the new content and stuff. It's just the last one I was, like, trying to do absolutely everything, get mm-hmm. all the achievements.
Yeah.
I didn't finish it. I got sidetracked by another game.
Yeah. Well, so I'm just trying to look at, like, the games that are coming up. And it seems as though, I'm just trying to think. I did want to talk about, or I'm interested in, like, Tales of Kinzira, Zao.
Yeah, that's soon.
That is soon. And another Crab's Treasure looks really funny.
Maybe there's more people in that one, too.
There probably will be, you know. And I probably won't play Senua Saga, but the reviews and stuff are coming out for it because that's about 2 months in. But yeah, there's some really good games coming down the pike. So yeah, if you're interested in the backlog or diving in and going back, like, kind of now's the time to do it, like you said earlier. Yeah. So, yeah.
I like the pun with dive on in.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a trip down memory card lane. Each week, the team will have to guess a historical game that would have released during the time of this episode's airing. We will start with its release date. And then I will give hints about the game for Joelle to attempt to guess what it is. Joelle, talk it out. There's like a black hole for this week, just putting it out there, of like games that I thought would make sense for me to cover. But yeah, maybe it's just the way that, you know, because you know how the days shift and whatever and leap years and whatnot. But so I picked a game for you and I hope you can get it. This game released on April 18th of 2023.
You pick a game that came out of last year.
Yeah, I did. Question is, can you guess it?
It came out last year in April.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not very good with the dates. I did just Google time in Holland because maybe I could phone a friend for Kat. But I'm sure she's sleeping right now.
So. She's probably asleep. We never added phone a friend into this game show yet.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to try with the dates. So next in, please.
Okay. It released on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Windows, Xbox One, Xbox Series S and X.
Everywhere.
And, yeah, Windows. I said Windows. Yeah, it's on PC.
Yeah, PC.
Okay. It came out on borderline everything.
Last year came out on everything. Last spring. Hold on, I just gotta... Was it a Persona... Persona? Was it a Persona game? All right.
No.
My mind, like, I'm just like, what happened last year?
What happened for breakfast, let alone what happened last year?
Yeah, next in, please.
Okay. It's a real-time strategy game.
Is it Octopath Traveler 2?
No. I don't think that's real-time strategy.
Oh, no, that's, I think, not. That's an RPG.
The turn-based,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, turn-based.
Maybe? I'm not sure.
Real time strategy.
RTS.
Like, just make sure that I don't say dumb things in continuation. Is the real time strategies, are those like your Civilization, like, games?
Is Civilization a RTS? It's like a StarCraft. Isn't that StarCraft? Real time strategy.
Yeah, it's like where you have these hordes of people, aren't they? And then they're...
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to manage everything, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Is it...
It's a real-time strategy, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure I had the genre right. Oh, what was that game? Oh, no. Oh, no. The game, it has a name, and... Shoot, I like can see the characters, but I can't think of the you know, when you need something it doesn't come to you. It's very sad. Is it anime, like in style? Like, is this
not really?
Okay, then never mind. I'm gonna try to make this
It's very stylized.
20 questions. Okay.
But no, you wouldn't go to it and say that's anime.
Oh, okay, then it's not the game I was thinking of. Next in, please.
Okay. It's a spin-off from another game. And that game originally released in 2011. Yeah, 2011.
Oh, is... Oh, 2011? Oh.
The original game came off... What came out in 2011, but this is a spin-off game from that game.
Oh, I thought I had it. I was gonna guess, the Breath of the Wild one.
No.
No, but I knew that wasn't right, because then you said 2011.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And the other game is a sandbox game, so a totally different style of game.
Oh, I'm not a real gamer. I don't remember.
Okay, I'll give you another hint.
Okay.
The goal of this game is to defend the overworld from an invasion of pig-like humanoid creatures.
Oh. Is it, is it the bird one? The birds where you have to, the Angry Birds?
No.
Oh, pig-like humanoid creatures. Oh, is it, is it the pigloid I feel like it might be. Is this a game that you played?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's a. Oh no!
You're having a mind block. I can see that you're putting the pieces together.
I know. I'm like, oh, the pig one. shoot! I know. I know. All right,
I'll give you another one.
I can see it in my mind. Yes.
There are crafting and gathering mechanics.
Yes. Yes, they are. Yes, there is. Oh, it's Fudge. What is that game? What is the title of that game? I don't do well under pressure. It's like something. It's set in London, isn't it?
No.
Oh.
I have one left. One hint left.
Great. Let's have it.
The player commands troops of new mobs and previously enemy mobs.
Yeah, I don't know what this game is.
It's Minecraft Legends.
Oh my god, that's why.
But I'm like, I talked so much about it last year. I'm like, she'll remember this.
No,
but
I
But like, seriously though, there was like a hole in this week where I was like, no, don't like that game. No, don't like that game. Yeah. Yeah. It was Minecraft Legends. Well, it was released on April 18th, 2023.
Congratulations to everyone else listening that got it, except for me. So, good job. I was just like, oh, man. I just don't do well at these. But, yeah, I thought it was, what was that game? It's not a real-time strategy, no, though, now that I'm thinking about
With
it.
Birds?
What, there was the Angry Birds that I guessed, which wasn't right.
Yeah.
That was the mobile one. But then when you said pig... humanoid. What is that, like, shooter game that's set in London?
With pigs?
They have pigs in it. Yes.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about. I was talking about the piglin, because the piglin come in from the nether do that. And then the enemy mobs, the previous enemy mobs is, you have, obviously, the golems that are created, but then there's also the creepers and the skeleton and the husk, I think it was. Uh-huh. The zombies, they also, they're things that you can kind of wrangle to help you battle in the game. What game are you talking about?
I'm
intrigued. You were just making stuff up, weren't you?
No. Oh, Watch Dogs. That's what it was.
That is a lot older. But yes, it's because you were thinking about the person wearing the pig mask in the artwork for Watch Dogs 3 in Legion. Legion.
Yes, that's what
I see where you were coming from. And I did play that.
There's logic.
That came out. When did that come out?
Watch Dogs Legion came out. It was not last year. So that's when, and it's not a real-time strategy. 2020. It came out in 2020.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, Minecraft. I I don't know much about Minecraft, so
yeah, that's I can see how you put that visual picture together too, because that
pig humanoid dude
wearing the pig mask. Yeah, I get it.
Very iconic. It made an impression on me. It did.
I see where your brain went.
It did. It tried, but it wasn't real time strategy. And then what was the other one I was thinking of? The anime real time strategy anime. That one was. It'll come to me like in 2 minutes. I'll be like, that one.
Like Fire Emblem or those something? Fire I don't think, Emblem. But I don't think, I don't know if that's real time strategy. It's I don't. Not. What is it? Fire Emblem.
It's a fantasy. Mind you,
it might be different. It's a tactical role playing. Okay, so I mean, like, kind
of? That. I was thinking, because you have to move your pieces, like, around the board and. That's like not
Persona
the same.
Persona 5 Tactica.
Yeah, it's not the same, but in my
There's
mind.
There's another one I gotta play.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
You ready to talk about those few new stories?
Yes, let's go.
All right, let's go. We're back with News of the Week, and I've got two stories that I kind of want to pick Joelle's brain on. So first off, earlier in the week, I was watching Phil DeFranco's YouTube channel. I watch his shows pretty much every day to kind of get a tidbit of news, because I do like how he covers the news, because he does a bunch of entertainment, internet news, along with big world stuff. And one of the stories that he covered was around this petition around Stop Killing Games. So the original manifesto, I guess you could say, was originally from the YouTube channel Accursed Farms.
Yep.
And he wanted to talk about the concept of like game ownership, especially in this world with digital games, right? Because like back before, even if you had an online, you know, like PC game where you play online, obviously the servers would be run by the people who run them, the companies and stuff. But you could also set up your own servers and play locally and whatever. You know, lots of games have done that over the years. But now, because of the way that the technology works now, only the company is running these servers. So when they go offline, they essentially disappear, right? Mm-hmm. We've been talking about this for a while now with like game preservation and all these kind of concepts. Like, I still have my PS4 with the PT demo on it. Stuff like that, right? So this petition is called Stop Killing Games. You can find it on stopkillinggames.com. And I'll read you through kind of like the concept of what's happening, because this all kind of took place after the crew went offline. So, this site is dedicated to real-world action on ending the practice of publishers destroying video games they have sold to consumers. And then it has a take action here button. An increased number of video games are sold as goods, but designed to be completely unplayable for everyone as soon as support ends. The legality of this practice is untested worldwide, and many governments do not have a clear laws regarding these actions. It is our goal to have authorities examine this behavior and hopefully end it, as it is an assault on both consumer rights and preservation of media. We are pursuing this in two ways. Action on The Crew. The video game The Crew, published by Ubisoft, was recently destroyed. The vernacular they're using here is very particular. Destroyed for all players, and has a player base of around at least 12 million people. Due to the game's size and France's strong customer protection laws, this represents one of the best opportunities to hold a publisher accountable for this action. If we are successful in charges being pressed against Ubisoft, this can have a ripple effect on the video games industry to prevent publishers from destroying more games. Under government petitioning, official government petitions have been introduced to prohibit the practice of intentionally rendering commercial video games inoperable when support ends. Currently, petitions for the United Kingdom, Canada, and Australia have been launched and will soon be open for signing. Plans are also underway for the European Union, but will unfortunately be delayed due to processing times. Further government petitions may be started later with enough assistance. If you are able, please engage in assisting in the effort or encourage others who can. The FAQ can also be viewed for more information. So, like I mentioned, the concept here is they're saying when games, online games, go offline now, there's no way to have access to them anymore, because you cannot play them locally. Joelle, we've talked about game preservation a lot here, be it digital games that are removed from the App Store, online games like this. What are your thoughts on this petition?
I, at first, was unsure. I mean, I'm all for video game preservation, and I think that if you buy a good, you know, we buy video games, they're expensive. Like, we should be able to play them. I guess, like, coming from the generation where, yeah, if you still have the console and you still have the cartridge, like, you can play the game. It's yours. Correct. Like, forever.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, you know, we're coming into this world of not owning stuff. Like, I don't need to physically own.
We're paying for the license to access.
Yes, we're paying for the license to access it. And also, there is so much to access, right? Our pool to get things from is enormous. And it's growing even more so with Game Pass and accessibility and things launching on all platforms and how things are progressing. Like, our limitations are becoming fewer and fewer. So on the one hand, I thought, you know, do I really care if I can't access, you know, Diablo 4 in 10 years because they're going to shut down the servers? I mean, I'm just guessing. I'm not, like, saying this. It just is a hypothetical.
No, you're being rhetorical about it.
Like, I like that game. That game is fun. If I want to replay it for nostalgia purposes, you know, in a decade, I should be able to do that because I paid for it. And having that same expectation. Or, like, am I really going to lose anything if I don't have it anymore? So I saw what Phil's coverage did, and then I went on to the Accursed Farm video, and I watched about half of it. And I think he made a really good point around the legality of selling goods versus services. And he talked about, like, when you buy a good, it means that you own that good and it is your property. And video games are sold under the legal, like, category of goods. And so, therefore, if the good is going to expire, I need to know that as a consumer. Like, if it's going to have an expiration date or if it's not going to be available, then I need to know that. That's, like, my right to know, at least in America. He said, however, when you rent something or when you get something as a service, you're supposed to be informed as the consumer when that is going to change, right? So if I rent an apartment, I get a contract or a lease that has, you know, the binding rules of that agreement for a certain amount of time. And so a part of, like, what his argument was, which I appreciated, like, him talking about, is that, like, this practice needs to be talked about, like, in the government space, because we have to decide, are video games, are some of them goods? Are some of them sold as services? And if some of them are sold as services, then they need to be available and they need to inform the user when that service will be no longer available. Because there's so much authority and power that the studio or the developer holds in just saying, well, we're just not going to do it anymore. And then your game is gone. And that's where they're using the game The Crew, published by Ubisoft, because they're saying that this is, like, an adequate enough of an event where they can use this to propel some sort of action and to hold a large studio accountable. So I think like that was a good distinction, at least for me to understand, because it's very kind of gray a little bit, where I'm like, yeah, I can see where that would stink. Like, if I bought a Blu-ray and then all of a sudden, like, I couldn't use my Blu-ray, like, to watch a movie, that would really suck. But I guess I just don't think about that if I don't have the physical thing in my hand. So I do think that there's teeth to this. And I think it should, there should be some regulation around what this means, because you pay a lot of money for these games. You create community around these games. You create memories. There's a lot of emotion and nostalgia that goes into these. And to mm-hmm. just have it kind of disappear without any sort of way to hold on to it, you know, like for the player to be able to have a server to give people a heads up to say, like, this is happening. You own a certain slice of the IP of the code because you bought it. So, like, here. Because, in essence, the accursed farm was talking about, like, you know, if you buy digital assets for some of these games and the developers stop supporting it, all of your assets are gone. It's just like a sunk. It's just your money is just gone. And I don't, that doesn't, like, sit that right with me that there's no accountability for that.
So let's look at the crew a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the crew came out in 2014 as an online-only racing video game. It had a sequel, The Crew 2, which came out June 29th, 2018. Then another one came out, The Crew Motorfest, which was released on September 14th of 2023. On December 14th of 2023, Ubisoft announced that servers would shut down after March 31st, 2024. And they did. So they did tell them the game was up for 10 years. Mm-hmm. How expensive is it to run these servers? Mm-hmm. It's not like there isn't other games to play, mm-hmm. which I get. You didn't buy whatever, if you bought like skins or all that kind of stuff. I see where that is. But the thing is this game was an online-only racing game, so no matter what, you had to be connected to the internet. And technically, by starting to play it, you sign the EULA. So, I get it. It's not physically yours in that sense, because what you bought wasn't a physical game. Mm-hmm. It was a license to access the game.
Right.
And a lot of services are like that. Right? Most, like, all my Adobe programs are like that now. Mm-hmm. We have Netflix. Things can come and go. You can buy some stuff off iTunes, but you can also rent. It's usually at a different price. It's also usually cheaper. Now, I'm sure when The Crew originally came out, it was like a full price video game and all that jazz, right? But that's how they get you. That's business, right?
Sure. I guess in my, you know, to that, like, I see where you're coming from there. I guess a part of me, though, would be like, why can't, if it's online only, why is there no option then for folks to, because I don't, is it, I mean, maybe I'm mistaken, but my understanding is that the game will just be gone, and there's no way for anyone to access their content.
The game is gone.
Yeah, the game is gone. So why is
probably because it's so, you need such a beefy machine to be able to run it mm-hmm. that it's not practical. And they've probably done so many hack and slash patches to, like, update things and whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible to have it so that someone can play it locally.
Sure.
Let alone PC. Like, PC one side, let alone, like, Xbox or PlayStation or whatever else, right? It just wasn't designed with that thought and process, because now we're talking about games as a service, mm-hmm. which this game is a game as a service.
Mm-hmm. I guess in some ways I think that, I don't know if it's just like my American, like, consumeristic ways, but I feel like if I created a community and a space for myself where, like, that's what I do, like, I play this game, even though it's been 10 years, I would probably be a little pissed that this game is just gone and there's no opportunity or option for me to have any sort of longevity in playing this game.
Yeah.
Especially but if I sunk all this money, like, into it. And I don't know if it needs just to be more clear, like, up front. I don't know if the pay.
It definitely was in the EULA.
Yeah.
That people just scan through That's and good. Hit whatnot.
Well, I think on the other hand, though, like, yeah, how long is that thing? Because, how.
But I have to. It's all the legalese that they have to put into it. And you're supposed to read it.
No, I know. This is a sneaky way. I also just feel like then. I don't, on the other hand, though, I also don't think, like, maybe it was all clear and, like, people are. I think this is an important conversation to have in some cases, because this can also get really out of hand in some ways, right? Where, if you're kind of going, if you allow the mind to kind of spiral and go into, kind of a extreme direction, you pay for all these games and all of a sudden, like, they're just gone. Like, that would really stink. Like, it would.
But there's lots of things that we pay for as experiences that you pay, you live your experience, and then that's it.
I don't know if we have that expectation, though, in this medium yet, though.
I would think we do, because it's called game as service.
Mm.
And the other thing you have to think about, too, okay, well, the game's been online for 10 years. It costs money to keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
And if people aren't playing it, then why should Ubisoft keep the servers running? If that's an expense, if that's preventing them from putting money into other games,
sure.
Then I get that. I don't know. Obviously, preservation, the fact that it is important to be able to preserve for historical sense these yes. games. It's also. Yeah, preservation, I'd say, would be one thing. The other thing you have to look at is the money side of it. And then also, too, how many people are actually still playing it. The games that we used to get that were on cartridges were multiplayers. There was no infrastructure needed to be able to play a lot of these games.
Right.
Or they have to build it with the intention that they're going to give you the power to be able to do that locally. Which I think with some of the games that we got now, the way that these things work, the massive multiplayer, the fact that we can play games across different platforms. Like, my husband's out there right now playing F1 2023. He's on a PlayStation, his buddy's on an Xbox, another buddy's on a PC.
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible to be able to do,
mm-hmm.
right? Imagine the infrastructure you need to do. So it's just impractical and not worth it for the companies to build. So I get it that it sucks that you pay all this money to get into something, but at the same time, it's like, that's why you sign the EULA.
Mm.
Sign, and I say that with big quotation marks.
Yeah,
and if you don't, then get a game that is not that. Play something else. And you got other opportunities. Guaranteed the Crew 2 and the Crew Motorfest. Maybe the Crew Motorfest probably has a discount on it now too, so you don't have to pay it full out.
Right. I think that there could be some steps, like, to remind or to do players, like, this isn't going to be a forever thing, and maybe. Maybe just in video games, if you've been playing for a while, you still have that expectation. I guess in some senses, you could think about it as, like, nothing lasts forever, right? Like, you get,
right.
like, if you buy a physical book and you read it a lot, like, it's going to fall apart and you might have to buy a new copy. Or if you, use a particular, like, cooking tool or whatever, like, nothing lasts forever. So, like, there's that argument. I just can see that if there's no regulation behind it, then things can just kind of go all
over
the place.
Like, shutting it off after, like, 3 weeks or a year. It's 10 years,
I understand,
right?
But then what's to stop someone, like, for developing something and saying, okay, well, this is an experience that you're paying for, in, like, especially when we get to, like, a virtual reality game or an AR game, and, like, as that progresses in technology.
Well, I think you have seen some, like, there have been games recently that shut down because they just didn't do well, and they refunded people.
Well, they refunded people, but I'm just saying that, like, as we get farther and farther into us experiencing and interacting with digital spaces, like, I can see where it's, like, almost, a museum show where, like, you pay X amount of money to enter into this virtual space to experience this one virtual thing. And you know that it's going to be, like, a one-time shot or for only a few weeks. And you're done. And then your experience is over. But what's to say that there won't be certain types of games that also will – I mean, you kind of have that in some cases, like, in – a Diablo where there's certain events that happen where you have to be online to experience them, but you just don't have to pay extra for it. Like, you just have to be there physically. You already have the copy. So I see it both sides. I don't think it should be the developer's responsibility to keep everything going forever, because that's not practical and that's not a good business. Like, that, like, that's not you can't expect Ubisoft to keep things going forever.
They probably had something in their terms of service that stating all along, if they plan to shut down this game, they would give you ample time, and it was probably defined, and that turned out to be 90 days, which sounded like December 14th until March 31st was just over 90 days. Maybe if they are to do legislation or something, it's just like, it is guaranteed to run for 5 years or something like that. Anything under, you would have to pay a percentage back or something like that.
Yeah.
That's it has to be in the TSCs, right? Like, to define that, I think that's the only way that they can put any kind of legislation around it, because you're paying for access. That's what you're signing up for. And if the company has it written somewhere in their tiny little notes, like, we have the right to turn this off at any time, and you said, yes, I agree to that.
Yeah.
That's on you.
That is on you. But you know, there also, though, is been proven that they write those things in tiny little scripts on purpose so that no one will read them to be an informed consumer. So
exactly.
So I think that there's a balance of it that maybe could come out of this, like you're saying, like, okay, this is a, you know, dependent on how well the game goes, we're going to commit to a certain time span for sure, and then if not, then we can pull it at any time, and that'll be it. Like, we don't owe you anything after so long. So
where I think, because remember when Destiny released and they were talking about it, and they're like, this game is going to span 10 years and, like, all this stuff. Like, I could understand if that was the marketing ploy, and then they decided, and I don't remember off the top of my head, I have to go look at it, like, when they decided to go to Destiny 2. And, like, if there's, like, a marketing promise where you get into, like, those, like, not like class action lawsuits, but like something like that, where it's like, you promised this, that's why we signed up to it. Then I think there's something going on there. But like, we're so entrenched in this idea as games as service at this point that, like, I know nothing's going to last forever. No. So you play it now, and guaranteed I'll be like, oh yeah, that's sad that that's going offline, but I've moved on to other things right now.
But a lot of people play one game for a long time. They don't play a bunch of games.
And I get that. I get that completely. They're not like us.
Yeah, no, especially, you know, if they have time restrictions or just they're just interested in this one, you know, category or genre of games, and they found their jam, and like 10 years is a long time. Like, a lot of
I think technology.
Oh yeah.
So just to give you an idea, September 9th, 2014 was when Destiny originally released, and then the sequel, Destiny 2, released in September of 2017. And you know, that had to cost people money to upgrade.
Well,
but like, I remember them talking about how this game and the story and everything was going to last 10 years and stuff. And like, I could see that, like, how they like finagle that, if that was their promise that it was going to be available for 10 years. And Destiny probably was still available, but they weren't feeding it with content the same way, because they had a new thing that they wanted people to pick up because it's business. And, you know, in 2017, we're getting into getting ready to start to get into new consoles and stuff. We didn't have them yet. They were in 2020. But yeah, preservation, definitely. I think it's kind of difficult to think that a company is going to build a version of something that's as high involved as The Crew or Destiny or anything like that, to be able to run locally servers and things like that, unless we get to the point where you can build your own server farm and figure it out yourself. But like, also too, it's probably just not stable, right?
Oh,
to be able to do that.
No, because I mean, you're gonna have to do maintenance on those servers, like you said. Like, nothing lasts forever. Things can go wrong, and again, like, it's just not. I mean, I'm not saying that it's sustainable to keep things going forever, but I think that maybe to make it a bit more clear to the average consumer that, like, Because, I mean, I know friends that only buy physical copies of games. And they're like, I understand that even though I buy my physical copy, it doesn't always mean that I'm still going to be able to play the game. Because if they shut down the support for it, then that doesn't save you all the time either. So,
right.
So I think that the mind shift and expectation also has to kind of widen, or the customer has to be more informed about how this works in the day and age. And I really would be interested, like, in how a younger generation, if they're like, who cares, like, things change all the time, and you know, this might not be an issue for
maybe not
younger players, because they just expect that it'll go away and they enjoy the moment when it is, and then, you know, there's other things to latch on to in terms of replay value, I guess. But, I mean, obviously this had a really great replay value. It was up for a really long time, so.
Yeah. So maybe the legislation, if they're able to kind of, like, make noise with this at all, is, like, a guaranteed, if you're going to offer something and have to pay $80 Canadian for it, that you have access to it for X amount of time, and if they decide to shut it down, they need to give you X amount of days time warning. And if it's anything beyond that, like they decide to close it early, they have to give you a percentage of money back, or the amount of money back, or something like that, because they made a promise and they broke it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the key. But and being clear on what that commitment is.
Right.
And that's the problem, is the lack of clarity.
The lack of clarity. Transparency. I think that really is kind of where it comes down to. And also, sometimes making things only available for so long can also make it that much more special, right? Because you have to savor it and understand that it's not going to just be there whenever you want. Like, you have to decide if this is worth my time and my money to make sure that, like, I'm going to want to play this for this long. And then that creates opportunities, like, for you to have you know, sequenced events, for you to drop things in a timely manner, like, et cetera, et cetera. So it might not either be a bad thing either for business, just knowing, like, hey, we're going to have this for 5 years, and either we need to do, like, another iteration of it because it's going so well, or we're going to create this great story and experience for the player, and then we're going to be done. Like,
yeah. Because the only unrenewable resource we have is time, right? And the solar eclipse here today is a prime example of that. You had the choice today whether you wanted to take a moment to experience this potentially once-in-a-lifetime event or not. And that's your choice. And that could cost you money. It's definitely going to cost you time.
Yeah.
And do you want to do that? And to have all the knowledge around what's processing. Because for people who went out to watch it, they had to go and invest in buying glasses and whatever else, because you don't want to break your eyeballs. So understanding that there is that kind of commitment, and that communication between a service provider and the person purchasing the service needs to be super clear. And right now we just check a box on a super long document that nobody freaking reads, and we're essentially signing our lives away and our money away, and that's it.
We just want to play that game.
We just want to get to play the hottest, newest, coolest thing. All right, on to the next story. So I thought this one was interesting because a few weeks ago we talked about the Switch emulator Yuzu shutting down because of the legal battle with Nintendo. But, excuse me. So this story comes out of The Verge from April 5th. So Apple opens up the App Store to retro game emulators. Game emulators have long been banned from the App Store, and they were one of the biggest reasons users in Europe might seek out third-party marketplaces. So to read through the story a little bit, Apple is loosening its App Store restrictions and opening the marketplace up to retro game emulators. In an update on Friday, so that would have been the 5th, Apple announced that game emulators can come to the App Store globally and offer downloadable games. Apple says those games must comply with, in quotes, all applicable laws, though, an indication that it will ban apps that provide pirated titles. The move should allow retro console emulators that exist on Android, at least those that are left, and bring their apps to the iPhone. Game emulators have long been banned from the iOS, leaving iPhone owners in search of workarounds via jailbreaking and other workarounds. They're also one of the key reasons so far that iPhone owners in European Union might check out third-party app stores now that they're allowed in the region. Apple's change today could head that off. Alongside the new rules on emulators, Apple's also updated its rules around super apps, such as WeChat, that now allows mini games and mini apps within these apps must be HTML5, clarifying that they can't be native apps and games. The change seems to come in response to the antitrust lawsuit filed by the United States, which accused Apple of attempting to stomp out both cloud gaming streaming apps and super apps. Apple recently started letting cloud gaming services like Xbox Cloud Gaming and GeForce Now onto the App Store. Outside the U.S., Apple seems to be responding to pressure from the European Commission. In another rule updated today, the company said that it will now allow music streaming apps in the European Union to include in-app links that point users toward outside purchases and mention pricing information. It will also allow developers to invite users to provide their email address to for the express purpose of sending them a link to the developer's website to purchase digital music content or services. After the commission called Apple's anti-steering rules illegal, Spotify attempted to update its app with links to its website to purchase subscriptions. So, just a side note, in case you didn't know, if you are going to sign up before this, if you are going to go sign up to a subscription to anything within Apple, a percentage of that subscription would end out going to Apple. That's kind of how they did it. But say you went and subscribed to Spotify on your desktop and then went and logged in on Apple, that money wouldn't go to Apple. Mm-hmm. That's why they're clarifying here how that works. So Spotify attempted to update its app with links to the website to purchase subscriptions, but it didn't receive approval from Apple for weeks. Spotify isn't happy with Apple's most recent change, however, as Apple is still planning a change to charge a commission on purchases made through outside links, despite EU Commissioner Margrethe Vestager saying Apple must allow music streaming apps to communicate freely with its users. Following the law is not optional, but Apple continues to defy that decision, Spotify person spokesperson Janine Moran tells The Verge. Effective April 6th, the commission can start noncompliance proceedings and impose daily fines. It's time for the decision, the device's action, to once and for all give consumers a real choice. So I started this because I thought it was interesting in the fact this idea of having emulators because of the whole Yuzu thing. So then I'm like, well, what are people emulating to put on these consoles? Like, if it's not games owned by other parties, then do the emulation companies go and get approval to have the games available? Like, I don't understand. I always looked at emulators as like skirting the law.
Well, that's also how rights. I thought it. I didn't think they were getting any permissions to do anything, which is why Nintendo always came after them so hard. Like, yeah, especially with all the Mario stuff. So my understanding is that, yeah, they are not going
maybe it's just an association we made with the word emulator.
Yeah.
So in computing, an emulator is hardware or software that enables one computer system, called the host, to behave like another computer system, called the guest. So I guess that's what we're saying. They're making iOS replicate Nintendo Wii. They're asking iOS to replicate something else. But I guess for the case of like a game streaming service or a game service, it could be iOS to replicate old PC or something like that to be able to have like controller buttons and things like that. But I just always associate it with pirating.
Yes. I mean, I my thought looking at this too was that because Android users can do this, it's like, well, I want to play a certain retro game like Sonic on my phone. And so I can go down an emulator and I can figure out how to do that from my phone. And Apple was like, no.
Well, because they didn't want to be caught in the middle right?
I guess. I also just feel like I'm just actually kind of fangirling over the EU for putting all of these larger companies in check, and like just with the the Microsoft Blizzard acquisition, like all that stuff. I'm just like, get it, EU. Like, you're helping us all out here. But I think in some ways, like sure, Apple didn't want to get in the middle, but also like they want to have such control over their content, right? Like, they want to dominate their ecosystem and not – they just want to keep it all, like, of themselves. And, like, now that I work as a project manager in software and on mobile applications, like, sometimes, like, they're just ridiculous on what they would want for your app to have as part of their release. And so it – I think that I'm glad that they're allowing emulators to be a part of it, and they're kind of getting their feet to the fire. And there's some other antitrust lawsuits that they're going through right now for Apple. So, like, mm-hmm. yeah, like they need to relax.
Like, yeah, in my mind. It's they've got such a monopoly, and yes. that's the problem,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
I understand for. So that they don't get caught up in legal bullshit is one reason. And if you're looking at it and it's like Apple's sure. trying to be altruistic, sure. they want legal. They don't want to deal with the legal bullshit. Mm-hmm. They also don't want to deal with any malware being shared, right? So mm-hmm. it locks down. In that sense, it's easier to control.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, in their benefit, it's they have complete control.
Yeah.
So they can say yay or nay, and they can say, we need to take a cut. So... Yeah, it's like there needs to be a happy medium between all of it because it can't – it's not fair. And if you're not savvy,
yes.
right, to say yes. go sign up to it somewhere else so that you can bypass the Apple stuff because mm-hmm. it's so easy to just hit that subscribe button or the double click on the side and say subscribe and then it's in your subscriptions and whatever mm-hmm. and then part of that money is going to Apple. But at the same yeah. time, like you're also paying – for the service of Apple, we pay for Windows operating system. You know, like there's.
I mean, don't you pay for that when you buy the phone?
I guess so, but they keep updating it, do they not?
They do, but I guess I feel like, but in some ways though, like I can, if I don't want to update, I can choose not to and just have my phone.
You can. Yeah, I mean, you can, but you're susceptible to.
Oh, I understand issues. That. Oh, I understand that, but yeah. I'm just saying that like. If I don't want to, I don't have to. But I mean, I know I see both sides. I just feel like this is not only in the emulators, but like, you know, with updating its rules around super apps like WeChat, like having games within mm-hmm. games. And then like they're so particular. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, I feel like it's just being particular for particular sake because they want to keep their reputation. And on the other hand, I think it's a little... Like, I think it's both and for them, and I think they can, mm-hmm. I just think they can cool it for some things, and not be so stingy, yeah. but.
It's funny that the two stories that kind of percolated to the top of all the things that are happening in the video game world were two around ownership and
yeah.
control.
Yeah.
And how that's more and more that's coming to the forefront of who owns what yeah. and who has control over what mm-hmm. and what does it mean to purchase something digitally and to spend the money and who gets the money and then who supports it after the money is spent and
yeah.
safety and
I just also
tech. Yeah.
It's so crazy that like. We're also still having these conversations in 2024. Like, so how far behind also, like, our regulations and
oh,
government
yeah.
bodies just in, like, making these decisions now?
If they had knew it was going to get to this point when the original iPhone came out, they probably would
yeah.
have smacked it down. But the thing is, like, they didn't have the volume.
No.
Now they have the volume. Mm-hmm. Now they have the cornerstone on the market. Now they're like, no, it's our control. Mm-hmm. You signed up to the same EULA.
Well, I think...
and the terms and conditions.
Everyone did not read this. Everyone.
We all didn't read the scroll of text with all the legalese.
But what might be to their detriment, though, is that it's possible then that companies are going to try to skirt using their service in the App Store then.
And that's probably what ends up supporting the fact that we get all these updates, that we do all this stuff. Yeah. And they're just going to say, you get a new operating system when you buy a new phone, and it only goes on a new phone. What happens when your phone is a year out of date?
Well,
like just a year.
Well, the
do you not
yeah.
get it? Or do you pay for it? Do you pay for the license to access the OS, to constantly have the OS update?
Well, they had an antitrust lawsuit against that with their watches. Because after 3 years, your watch like would not work with certain apps. Because Apple wanted you to buy a new watch. So they would specifically not push updates to watches that were under a certain generation. If they were 3 generations or older, they wouldn't push updates to them. And the American government came and said, like, no, no, no. Like, you can't do that. Like, you have to push to more than just, like, 3 years old technology. So I think, too, like, they do a little bit of shady things that also demand this type of scrutiny from them a little bit, because they, again, like, want to keep the consumer buying more products because their watches, like, won't work if you have a 3-year-old watch. Like,
and it is important to have these discussions mm-hmm. to be informed consumers about what we are spending our money on. Yes. It is not wrong to spend money.
No.
On a service, on a time-based, you know there's a limitation on it. That is what it costs for access to whatever it is you're trying to get access to. As long as you know that what you're signing yourself up for. And if that means you get it for 3 weeks or you get it for 3 years or 30 years, you need to know.
Yep, it's then my decision to decide if I'm going to engage in that or not. And I think that's just what the issue is. It's like you have to inform the consumers, because I mean that's a lot of the work that is done by federal government in some cases, is that you're like, no, you have to inform consumers about what is happening. And maybe you'll do it in the most sneaky way possible, but you still have to make it available. But I think more and more as we go forward, there will be more and more pressure, just like even with the Apple and, like, you know, tracking apps. Like, you have to allow apps to track your movements for your data.
Oh, your location.
But, like, across your cookies and, like, your data across apps, so that they can track where you're going and what you're looking at, what you're spending.
And other things you're
That's
consuming.
That's right. Like, you have to give permission to do that on every single app. Like, that was a good thing to put into place, so that people, if they didn't want their data tracked, then they shouldn't. They can say no.
Yeah.
Say no, Leah. No to tracking.
They know. Oh, they know. Joelle, before we started recording this podcast, we said this shouldn't take
I know.
That long. It was going to be a short episode. As I see the recording, and now I know the edited version won't be this long, but it says 1 hour and 31 minutes, 1 hour and 32 minutes. No. So, yeah, we definitely have a gift to gab, but with that, I think it's time to close out the show. Yes. As always, check out the show notes on girlsongames.ca for links to the stories mentioned in this episode, including the videos. Thank you, Joelle, for doing that last week and continuing to do it this week.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it turned out to be okay?
Yeah, as far as I know, I didn't hear any complaints, so that's always good.
And we usually hear about them in Discord when, like, weird editing and things happen, so we appreciate you guys for calling us out on our BS when we make mistakes. If you have the power to rate and review this podcast on the podcasting platform where you're consuming it, I'd be much appreciated if you do so. Why? It helps with discovery, pushes us up in the rankings, and we use the comments to help us build our show. So mucho gracias for that. Thank you, Joelle, for hanging out with me this week. You will be hanging out with Catherine next week as I will be sipping margaritas in a pool.
Oh man, I might need to have one in your honor.
There you go. Perfect. I don't know if it'll be the two of you, if you'll bring on a guest, if Simon will be back, but you guys can figure that out next
week. That's right.
We will. Where can people follow you online to talk more video game stuff?
People can follow me at JoelleLauren87 on Instagram and on X at Gamer. Sorry, I forgot what my
name. It's been a long day. It's been a long day.
On X at gamer_comfy. But always saying hello and sharing photos of the eclipse at the Girls on Games Discord. Come say hi.
Lovely. And I am Leah Jewer on most social media platforms, and you're probably going to just see pictures of sandy beaches and palm trees for the next little while. You can track us down at our social media handles, the Girls on Games on X and Facebook, Girls on Games, no the in there, on Instagram and Threads, discord.me/girlsongames to continue this conversation and more. And if you ever want to see anything at all, you can track it down at our home base. That's our website, girlsongames.ca. My brain is on vacation.
It is on the plane over.
It's on the plane. I'm just thinking about sipping margaritas, getting sunshine, and then attempting to play Switch in the sun, which is not going to work. Yes. But with that, have a good week, everybody, and I'll be back, but Joelle and Kat will be around. Yes. So I look forward to listening to the podcast when I'm back.
Yes.
All right. Bye, everybody. See you later.
Bye.